We take a look at some of the week's top stories in national politics. A freshman Democratic representative is facing criticism for a tweet about an Israeli, pro-Israeli lobbying group. The Senate Majority Leader is planning a vote on the progressive Green New Deal. And reports say President Trump is likely to sign an agreement on border security that would avoid another government shutdown. Our question for you this week, do you think President Trump should sign this bill if it's passed by Congress, which includes $1.3 billion for barriers on the border? Should he seek money from other sources? Do you think Democrats are giving up too much money for a wall? Should we be thinking about border security in terms of a wall in the first place or using the money for other security measures? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is a political correspondent for The Guardian. Lauren, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I want to start with something you've been writing about. Actually, Representative Ilhan Omar, a Democrat from Minnesota, has been criticized for tweets she made regarding a pro-Israeli lobbying group. She later apologized for the remarks. Still a back and forth going on. Can you tell us what happened here?
So from the beginning, on Sunday night, she tweeted something that was, you know, widely condemned as an anti-Semitic trope. It sort of played into this idea of Jews and money, and was, you know, widely condemned, as we said, by her own party. Nancy Pelosi led a leadership condemnation of this. So Ilhan Omar, she came out and she apologized. She said unequivocally she did not mean to, you know, degrade, to insult anyone. Her point, actually, she wanted to make a point about the corrupting influence of money in politics. So here we are a few days into it, and the controversy is still ongoing because now both the president and the vice president have weighed in and called on her to Trump has said she should resign from Congress, but at the very least, she should be stripped of her positions on the committees in Congress. Now, there is a parallel going on here. Republicans recently stripped Congressman Steve King of Iowa of all of his committee appointments because of comments he made related to white nationalism. So Republicans are trying to draw a parallel and saying what she did is the same. She should be taken off, especially the Foreign Relations Committee, where she now has a seat as a freshman Democrat. So this is the stage we're at right now. Now a lot of several progressive members are kind of circling around Omar saying, look, the president has no standing to criticize someone for being anti-Semitic. He himself didn't condemn neo-Nazis during a rally in Charlottesville in 2017. So it's really now what started is Omar being sort of very much in the wrong. They're now sort of back. There was sort of bipartisan condemnation of Omar, and now we're seeing, at least now we're seeing Democrats sort of defend her and say, look, she apologized. She's trying to make this right. Mr. President, when have you apologized? When you've, you know, made these sort of racial transgressions or not stood up for the Jewish people, et cetera. So that's where we are today. We know that Steny Hoyer, the majority leader, he's a Democrat from Maryland. He has said she will not lose her position for committee assignments despite the calls to do that. But he said he's going to watch her very closely. And if in the future, you know, her rhetoric doesn't change, if this becomes a pattern, then he will hold her more accountable or, you know, take action at that time.
On a wider note, is this a running theme? Younger freshmen, first-year Democrats, maybe more progressive than the average Democrat in Congress, having tension with the older, maybe more moderate leadership? Is this a thing we're seeing a lot of these days?
Absolutely. You're seeing there's still very much a minority, but a vocal minority of these incoming class of liberal progressives who want to challenge the status quo on Israel. They think, look, if the government in Israel is extremely conservative, we want to be a more pro-Palestinian voice in Congress. And one of the, you know, very rare policies where both Democrats and Republicans seem to still agree and very, very strongly agree is on sort of the U.S.'s posture towards Israel, its strong support for the nation. So this is very much out of tune with the rest of Congress, with their party, but also just Congress writ large. So they are facing a lot of backlash, and you know, there's a lot of progressives, you know, among them Jewish progressives, who say, we are with them, we take their point, we want to have this debate, but they need to be careful about the language that they use in doing this, because now, you know, you want to very clearly distinguish between a debate on policy and a debate about the government versus, you know, something that falls into, that is problematic and uses anti-Semitic rhetoric, et cetera.
Talking to political correspondent Lauren Gambino from The Guardian, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Let's turn to this ongoing story, an attempt to avert a shutdown, a second shutdown. What is the latest, Lauren, on a deal?
Fingers crossed. It looks like everything is falling into place. This is, however, as a cautionary note, where we were the last time a government shutdown happened. It looks like Congress was poised to pass legislation. Trump was going to sign it and then changed his mind at the last minute. So we're very conscious that that could be the outcome. But it does seem like no one wants to relive a shutdown. You know, federal workers are still digging out from that 35-day shutdown. They just don't want to put people in this position again. So it does look like, you know, the leaders of both houses, Republicans and Democrats, are saying this is a good deal. It's not great, but it's the best compromise we can get. And the Republicans are really putting pressure on Trump to sign off on this. And we heard him today say over and over again he doesn't want another shutdown, and that he's considering other ways to sort of, you know, build, finish his wall, is now his new way of phrasing it, finish the wall.
Let's give a listen to President Trump talking about exactly that. This was yesterday, saying, and not wild about the deal, but we can build the wall in a different way.
We're building the wall, and we're using other methods other than this. And in addition to this, we have a lot of things going. We have a lot of money in this country, and we're using some of that money, a small percentage of that money, to build the wall, which we desperately need.
People have pointed out the president using a lot of different language. You were hinting at that a moment ago, Lauren, about the status of the wall, saying we need to build the wall, we're building the wall, the wall is almost done. There he's saying we're in the midst of building it through other ways. Are we getting a little bit of a confusing message from the president about what exactly is happening with wall construction?
Yes, he has oversold the progress. Right now they're sort of debating the terms of what this funding would do. The current text, the bill that they're hoping will avert this shutdown, does include funding for fencing. This gets back to word choice. Of course, Trump's called for a wall, and he's, you know, earlier wanted a concrete wall than a steel wall. This would be fencing specifically, 55 miles of new fencing. So what is actually being built is, you know, isn't exactly as Trump is sort of portraying it, but certainly that this new deal would include some money towards, you know, fencing, which is a barrier along the border. It's new fencing, and we're seeing Republicans really claim that as a victory. You know, Nancy Pelosi said there wouldn't be $1 for this wall, and here we are, we're getting 55 miles of new fencing along the border. Obviously not exactly, as you said, what Trump has portrayed, but nonetheless it is a barrier.
Now, we're still watching for all the details on this deal, but is this something that keeps the government open for a long time, or are we back here in 2 weeks?
That's a great question. So it's going to fund the government through the fiscal year. So we'll get through September, which is, you know, a pretty big feat, because we have been seeing a lot of these 2 week, 4 week, 6 week type deals just to get through, you know, the current, or just to keep the government open while they continue this debate. So this, you know, even though it's actually just a few months and it'll fly by and we'll be in these big fraught negotiations again in September, it is a pretty significant feat, especially for a Congress that is this divided and this partisan.
We're talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian, looking at some of the week's top news in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We're coming up. We'll talk about this proposal, this resolution from Democrats for a Green New Deal, talking about big changes in American energy policy and social policy and more. What do you think of it? Do you want to see an ambitious federal government effort to turn the tide on climate change? From what you've seen of this plan, is it in the right direction or going too far, making the wrong decisions? Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, says he wants to bring it up for a vote to get people's views on it there. What do you think? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian, checking in on some of the top news out of the nation's capital. Lauren, I mentioned we'd talk about the Green New Deal idea. Yesterday, we talked to Wisconsin Representative Mark Pocan about his support for that series of proposals meant to combat climate change and make some big changes to the economy. This is a non-binding resolution. It doesn't actually put policies into action. Politically, though, what is the goal here from people who are proposing this Green New Deal, Lauren?
So politically, I mean, the big, broad goal is to make the U.S. carbon neutral in 10 years. It's a stunning goal. It's breathtaking. It's almost certainly not going to happen. But they want to really kickstart the momentum around big action on climate change. I don't think there's any coincidence that, you know, it's being spearheaded by a millennial member of Congress, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's young. She's listening to people who are saying, this is something that's going to affect me in my lifetime. We need to take big action. So very broadly, I want to tackle climate change, but it also has plenty of other ideas, such as Medicare for All, the health care plan proposed by progressives, that kind of get beyond how you typically think of climate change. So they're also trying to make this a very big, broad, like holistic approach to fighting climate change.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made an announcement regarding the Green New Deal. Here's what he had to say.
I've noted with great interest the Green New Deal. And we're going to be voting on that in the Senate. We'll give everybody an opportunity to go on record and see how they feel about the Green New Deal.
Mitch McConnell and a lot of Republicans seem to see this as a winning issue for them. A lot of kind of derision and mockery, I think it's fair to say, pointed from Republicans at the Green New Deal. Can you talk about Republicans and their response?
Yes, as you said, they are pretty over the moon about this. I mean, because it is so broad and so sweeping and incorporates so many of the progressive ideas like Medicare for All and a federal jobs guarantee, this kind of idea, they think, is going to be, so easy to paint the entire party in 2020 is far too left. It has been endorsed by a number of Democratic presidential candidates, so Republicans are eager to use that against them in the presidential race. But keep in mind, the House was won. The Democrats won the House with with moderates, a handful of moderate victories, these sort of purple districts. And so Republicans are looking at these districts thinking, you know, we need to put pressure on them. We need to say, you know, look at what their party's doing. Don't you, you know, you need a Republican instead. And so they're thinking that could be a kind of a winning message going into 2020. And we'll see.
And yeah, we've seen some polling out on this, and it looks like a huge generation gap in support for the Green New Deal with millennials, unlike older generations, baby boomers in particular, millennials really liking this idea, at least from the early polling we've seen. What kinds of responses have you seen in the public, even though this is pretty new?
Well, and that's it. I mean, I think that's key here. And I think there are, you know, privately, I've heard, I talked to a Republican strategist, actually, who said, you know, we need to be looking down the road here. If we're going to criticize them for this, you know, what they're mocking is sort of a silly and pie-in-the-sky idea, we need to have our own plan, because Democrats have started to come back at Republicans and say, oh, you know, for example, one Democratic senator was that I just spent the morning reviewing the Republican plan to fight climate change, and oh, wait, there isn't one. So, you know, when you look at the generation gap and you look at what young people are, you know, prioritizing in terms of issues, we've not really seen climate change be at the top of people's list, but clearly with these young people it is, and they'll be, you know, they'll be the majority of voters soon. So I think there's Democrats sort of are saying, you know what, fine, dare us to take votes on this because we think in the long run it's a winning message. And there are some Republicans who believe that Republicans should do a better job, you know, discussing the issue and you know, offering their own version of sort of a climate change proposal.
And meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, before it had come out, referred to the idea as the Green Dream or whatever they call it, didn't seem to be leaping into support for the Green New Deal. Are there a lot of Democrats who maybe aren't so willing to get on board here?
I mean, absolutely. Nancy Pelosi is a strategist. She could probably see this coming for, you know, see the Republican criticism of it coming from a mile away and knew that it probably wasn't the best way to secure her House majority in 2020. But that being said, they're hoping it's a conversation starter. She is she's a huge proponent of climate change. She wants to see action. And so they're hoping that this, you know, the excitement over it kind of dies down and they can focus on, you know, smaller piecemeal proposals that actually get at tackling climate change. But Republicans are going to be asking every single purple district Democrat about this issue. And, you know, a lot of these vulnerable Democrats will have to answer for it, and they're probably not happy about that.
Talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent for The Guardian, looking at the latest news in national politics, from the shutdown to the Green New Deal and beyond. Let's take a quick look at the 2020 presidential field. Lauren, lots and lots of Democrats announcing, lots more expected. I won't try to break down each name right now because we don't have a year, but what are you seeing in this field? What's jumping out to you?
Well, I think the first thing is you look at this and there are more women and more candidates of color. You have a gay veteran. It's incredibly diverse. The joke is there's even a vegan. Cory Booker is a vegan. So you're looking at a really diverse field. They offer so many different choices, really, in terms of both style, substance, how to approach Trump, what types of voters they might appeal to. I mean, really, for Democrats, it's an embarrassment of riches. They have so many choices this time around. So I think that's the most striking thing. There is a tilt to the left. They are, you know, at least this initial sort of burst of candidates, we're seeing them really embrace the Green New Deal, as we're talking about Medicare for All, these really big progressive plans that we saw Bernie Sanders champion in 2016. So, you know, there's been a few stories asking who's the candidate for the center, and, you know, maybe that's Amy Klobuchar, who just announced, and there's a few other more moderate types thinking of jumping in.
Now, you could look at it and say, oh, there's so many people, it's going to confusing chaos, it's bad for Democrats. But then looking back at the last presidential election, there were a ton of Republicans. They couldn't fit them all on one stage. So it's not necessarily a bad thing for the ultimate outcome, is it?
No, you know, there's a lot of people that thought 2016 was really reductive in the sense of, you know, you just had two candidates and it became this test of, you know, liberal versus moderate and establishment versus non-establishment. So there's a lot of Democrats who are excited to have this debate about what the party is. And, you know, with no front runner, any one of them really has a fairly decent chance, obviously some better than others, but nonetheless, like as it is right now without Joe Biden and without Bernie Sanders in the race yet, you know, a lot of these candidates have a great opportunity. They're traveling, they're raising their profiles. So as it stands right now, it's not a bad thing for Democrats.
And finally, Lauren, a quick look at the latest on the mess in Virginia. We have the governor and attorney general there, and a top, both Democrats and a top Republican lawmaker, all being involved in one form or another of a blackface scandal from the past. Lieutenant governor for a pair of sexual assault allegations. What's the latest we're hearing from Virginia?
It's strange because they've all, to various degrees, been called on to resign, and none of them have. So So there's sort of this, almost a showdown. None of them are resigning. And, you know, Governor Northam is trying to start this and going around the state, having these conversations about race as part of his healing. So he's really trying to stay in office and to hold on. But, you know, obviously with the top three members of the government, all, you know, if one resigns, there's political consequences down the line. So if they all were to resign, you know, a Republican might take over the state, which Democrats don't want. Now there's just this very weird moment. We're kind of hanging in the balance, I guess, to see what happens next. But as it stands, none of them are stepping down.
And briefly, I saw a national correspondent tweet, remember Ralph Northam? And in this news environment, I'm sure it's going to stay big news in Virginia, it quickly gets crowded out of the national conversation.
Absolutely. I was thinking of that tweet as well, because, I mean, really, he's fallen. You know, last week it was all about Virginia, and now this week they're all still in office and we are not talking about it.
We'll leave it there. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Been talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian. She was with us to talk about this week's top news in national politics.